But no, he said
about the same. I'm trying to beat this thing. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, May 4th, 2011. It's 9:30 a.m. and the City Council will soon come to order. But before I ask our fantastic council clerk to call the roll, I'd like to recognize for a very special and sad memorial, Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. We're honoring Shiloh Hampton today. On Monday, May 2nd, the flag of the city of Portland was lowered in honor of 14-year-old Shiloh Hampton, who was a victim of homicidal violence. He was a first-year student at Madison High School, where he played on the football team as a linebacker and tight end. His dream was to play for a Texas university. According to his teachers and coach, Shiloh was always polite and respectful and very protective of the people he cared about, especially his older brother. Our thoughts are with his family, friends, and loved ones. We will all miss his ever-present smile. This is the seventh time that we've lowered the city flags since April of 2009 to honor our children. In June of 2009, we honored 4-year-old Eldon J. Raban Smith. July 2009, 17-year-old Fernando Chavez died of homicidal violence while trying to recover his stolen bike. December 2009, 4-year-old Ashton Lorenzo Medina Barr, he and his mother were victims of domestic violence-related homicide. July 2010, 17-year-old Billy Moore was shot after getting off the bus after visiting his dying mother at OHSU. August 2010, 29-day-old Jacoby Phelps died of abuse. April of last month, we honored 14-year-old Yashani Vaughn. Today, we are joined by Shiloh's foster mother, Peggy Washington, and assistant vice principal at Madison High School, Tammy O'Neill. If they wish to speak, they can, but we're first going to have a moment of silence in honor of Shiloh. Thank you. Does Peggy or Tammy wish to say anything? Or come on up. Come on up and sit at the table. Yes. And just give us your name.
Tammy O'Neill. And I just want to say quickly, as you know, this has impacted our community significantly. And I guess I would just appeal to all of you to do whatever you can. My daughter should be able to go to the mall like Shiloh. And we shouldn't have to worry about anything like this happening to him. So if you could help us out here, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you for being here.
We're very sorry for your loss, and we appreciate you being here today to illustrate the fact that this is obviously far more than headlines and statistics. And I can tell you what we need most right now are witnesses. And we need folks, we need students, we need anyone who was around at the time of the shooting to come forward. We're desperate. So, thank you. And you're welcome to stay, but you're also, you can leave as well. We won't be offended. Yep. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. We now have another special presentation. I'd like to recognize Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. As my colleagues know, I have the great honor of being the council liaison to Elders in Action. And I serve with two distinguished county commissioners, Loretta Smith and Judy Shiprack. I'm going to invite both forward to the podium. And May 2011 is National Older Americans Month. We have a proclamation, Mayor, that we're going to issue, and we're also going to welcome our two guests. Also in the audience are Vicki Herson, Executive Director, Elders in Action, if you could raise your hand, and Tara Krugel, who's also here, a Civic Involvement Coordinator. And I also understand we have members of the Multnomah County Aging and Disability Services. If you could raise your hand, we acknowledge your presence. You honor us today. Thank you. Ladies, before I read the proclamation, I'd like to just recognize each of you. First, thanks for being with us. And
thank you for having me.
And Commissioner Smith, would you kick us off?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Thank you, the rest of the board and the mayor. As at Multnomah County, we have a wonderful staff in our Aging and Disability Services Division. These are dedicated employees who work with our community partners to serve our seniors and people with disabilities. The division's efforts are increasingly important as the county's population continues to grow. We are also fortunate to have three fantastic advisory committees filled with people and volunteers who spend their time to make sure that we hear diverse points of view and that we fully take into account the opinions and experiences of the people we are trying to serve. Our Elders in Action Commission, for which Commissioner Shipwreck and I are co-liaisons to the board, give us advice on the concerns and needs of older Americans in our community. The Multi-Ethnic Action Committee ensures that seniors and people with disabilities, diverse populations, have equal access to quality and culturally appropriate kinds of programming and services. And lastly, but certainly not least, we have our Disability Services Advisory Council, which advises us on how to best serve people with disabilities in a respectful and conscientious manner. And I'd like to thank you for having me, Commissioner Fish.
And thank you. And Loretta, for over 20 years, you were in the front lines representing a certain senator in our community, working with issues of older adults and children. And we're delighted you've taken on those fights at the county.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Shipwreck, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Fish and council members, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to thank the City of Portland for your ongoing partnership with Multnomah County. And Commissioner Fish, you'll be joining us tomorrow for our proclamation. I want to extend an invitation to the rest of the City Council to join us as well. At our proclamation, we'll be honoring a few community members who've gone above and beyond in their involvement to the community. They are Lois Chilcott, who is a Menominee tribal member, who has made invaluable contributions, both as a board member and a volunteer, to the Native American Rehabilitation Association, the Native American Youth and Family Center, the Multi-Ethnic Action Committee, Elders in Action, and the National Indian Child Welfare Association. Mary Beth Brindley, who's been a passionate advocate for change in how our community views and values its older lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender members. She founded the Portland chapter of Old Lesbians Creating Change in 1999, and 2 years later, in 2001, co-founded two nonprofits, Senior Housing and Retirement Enterprises and the Elder Resource Alliance, which have united to form Gay and Gray. Cipriano Diaz, who is extremely dedicated to and invested in the Latino community. As a member of the Catholic Charities El Programa Hispano Board of Directors, he is respected for his steadfast commitment to the organization and esteemed by his fellow seniors, for whom he is a trustworthy and reliable representative who makes sure their voices are heard by agency staff. And Talitha Benjamin, who is a revered leader, serving our community in many ways. She is a board member of Loaves and Fishes, chairs the agency's site committee, and is the prime organizer of the annual Jambalaya Dinner, one of Loaves and Fishes' most important fundraising events. Now, I'd like to read you Multnomah County's proclamation, proclaiming May 2011 as Older Americans Month in Multnomah County and Portland, Oregon. The Multnomah County Board of Commissioners finds May 2011 is National Older Americans Month. This year's theme, Older Americans Connecting the Community, points to the important roles older adults play in making their communities good places for people of all ages to live, an ideal that both Multnomah County and the city of Portland heartily embrace. In sharing their wisdom, knowledge, and memories, older adults help deepen our respect for the past, inform our understanding of the present, and heighten our awareness of opportunities to shape a livable future. By engaging with young and old alike in their families and neighborhoods, in faith communities, in clubs and associations, at informal gathering places such as coffee shops, and at events that bring area residents together, older adults uphold the value of interdependence. As mentors to younger workers and students, entrepreneurs launching exciting and meaningful second careers, participants in political activities, and volunteers giving their time and energy to serve those in need, older adults exemplify what a valued member of the community means. The Multnomah County Board of Commissioners proclaim May 2011 is Older Americans Month in Multnomah County and Portland, Oregon, a time to acknowledge the many ways that older adults enrich our community with their seasoned perspective, concern for others, active involvement in daily life, and dedication to enhancing the well-being of generations that will follow.
Well, thank you, Judy. I'm going to read the city's proclamation that the mayor is also issuing. And before I do so, I do want to acknowledge that we will be having an opportunity to discuss the mayor's proposed budget over the next month. But I am pleased to tell you that there are important and substantial investments, particularly in the areas of public safety, in housing, in hunger and parks, among others, which benefit older adults in our community. There's a lot of good news in that budget, and we'll have a chance to talk in greater detail about that in the weeks ahead.
So if I could interrupt, I'd also like to acknowledge for Vicki and others that Commissioner Fish requested that our direct contribution to your efforts on an annual basis be budgeted in an ongoing manner, not a one-time manner, and I was able to say yes to his request, so thank you for making it, Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. So I want to thank George Hocker, my liaison to Elders in Action, for helping to pull this morning's event together, and it's my pleasure to read the Mayor's proclamation. Whereas May 2011 is National Older Americans Month, and whereas this year's theme of older adults connecting the community recognizes the important contributions of over 100,000 older adults in Multnomah County make to our community every day, and whereas the City of Portland recognizes the diversity and vitality of today's older Americans and the importance of healthy choices that enable them to continue to contribute to our community, and whereas the City is committed to helping our seniors age in place by providing affordable, safe, and accessible housing, and whereas the City supports the safety and security of older adults through the Elder Crimes Unit, which protects elders from crime, abuse, and fraud, whereas the City is working to end homelessness, which impacts older citizens at an alarming rate, whereas the City promotes mental and physical well-being through senior programming in Portland Parks and Recreation and provides open spaces in natural areas which offer healthy outdoor recreation opportunities, and whereas the City is adding new community gardens across the city so that all generations have increased access to healthy food and has partnered with Elders in Action in Multnomah County to connect more seniors with their local farmers market, whereas our community is committed to maintaining the independence, self-determination, and dignity of older residents to ensure that they will continue to strengthen our community. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, City of Roses, do hereby proclaim May 2011 as Older Americans Month. Yay. Congratulations. Mayor, can we get a quick picture?
Yep. All right, everybody, quick picture. We're celebrating.
Let's not go. Where's our? Oh, we gotta open it up. The view here is very fancy. We all hold it closer. Ladies, thank you very much.
Thank you,
commissioners. All right, Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Adams?
Here. A quorum is present. We shall proceed. Beginning with communications, can you please read the title for item number 419?
Request of Nancy Metella to address council regarding Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Ms. Metella? Hi, welcome. How are you? Glad you're here. The rules of the room are, if you're representing yourself, you don't have to say anything but your name, no address, no phone number. If you're an authorized representative of another organization or business or nonprofit, please let us know, and that applies to everyone who testifies. The clock in front of you will help you count down your 3 minutes. We're glad you're here.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. Nancy Metella, I am with a Hanford Citizens Watch group called Heart of America. I am here for your active support in petitioning the U.S. DOE to remove Hanford Nuclear Reservation from the list of candidate sites for the National Permanent Storage of Future Radioactive Waste. The recent tragic event at Fukushima underscores the potential devastating effects an accident would have on people and wildlife in the Columbia River Basin, including Portland. You have heard this before because I was here 2 years ago, but let me summarize the situation and update you on the drastic U.S. DOE plans. After 21 years, those of us citizen groups that have been participating in hearings, we need your clout. We need your help. This is the final push. Currently, Hanford, which is roughly 200 miles from here, is the most contaminated site in the Western Hemisphere, with its continuing degradation of the water and soil from the World War II nuclear waste that's stored there. This is already documented. There is already documented leakage of strontium-90 in the Columbia River at concentrations of 1,200 times the EPA standard. There are over 1 million people living downriver from Hanford, including Portland. This fact alone makes the situation perilous without adding further waste. Yet, the Department of Energy is considering bringing more extremely high-level nuclear waste to Hanford on an ongoing basis by declaring the site to be the National Radioactive Waste Repository. USDOE's own draft of the Environmental Impact Statement says adding these wastes to Hanford will almost double the curies of radiation and increase groundwater and Columbia River contamination dramatically, including a tenfold increase in cancer risk. Besides the river contamination, Portland will be affected much more directly. If Hanford is selected out of the six sites, truckloads of radioactive waste would travel along interstate routes passing through our cities. Specifically, we are told that the Hanford proposal would mean between 12 and 27,000 truckloads of highly radioactive materials traveling through Spokane and Portland along I-5, I-90, I-84, and I-205. Although not included in recent drafts of the Environmental Impact Statement, a 2008 U.S. DOE study estimated 800 deaths would occur just simply from the ambient radiation of the trucks passing along the highways. That does not include the unimaginable number of deaths from a truck accident, earthquake, or intentional attack that could happen in or near our city. A study vetted by nuclear scientists.
Go ahead and finish up.
In 2004, thank you, Mayor Adams, indicated up to 57 square miles could be rendered uninhabitable, wiping out much of the city of Portland, causing 3,000 immediate deaths in the event of a transportation calamity at the confluence of I-84 and I-205. In the past, this was considered an extreme doomsday statement that most people ignored. With the events of Fukushima, no one is dismissing this possibility of this scenario. I know all of you oppose this. I'm not here to ask your support. And in fact, Mayor Adams is drafting a letter to Secretary Chu and the DOE expressing opposition. What I'm here to do is to underline that this is our last chance to testify against, to object and testify against the US DOE's choosing Hanford as the permanent repository of the nation's radioactive waste. On June 27th, 2011, that will end the public commentary. The US DOE will then make their choice and submit it to Congress for a final decision on the national repository. The final meeting here in Portland is May 19th at 6:30 in the evening here at DoubleTree Lloyd Center. I already am aware that you have a budget meeting that night, but I implore you to send representatives and speak loudly and strenuously about this possible decision. Your handout has information on the back for Secretary Chu of the DOE and the person that is directly in charge. I implore you to add your clout to us tired citizens who've been working for 21 years on this. Thank you very much.
Well, tired and persistent. And I know I speak for everyone on council when I thank you and the group for that. We're working to try to get a time certain when I could pop in to the hearing and provide testimony and then pop out and leaving our budget forum as briefly as possible. I have provided testimony, as you know, to previous sessions in town, and I will be bringing a resolution to council. Our advice has been to wait, provide testimony in opposition, but wait until the deadline passes to see if we're in or out, and so I will be working with you at the appropriate point to have a resolution before the City Council and raise the visibility of this issue.
Absolutely.
Everything you describe, at times you've sort of, the group has been derided as, you know, a doomsday scenario, and then Japan proved you right.
Exactly, and thank you for your 2 years of support, Mayor Adams.
Sure. So. Thank you very much for taking the time to come and testify. Another thing you've done today is to let a lot of citizens watching on cable know about this issue.
Yes.
If they want to help with advocacy, because I know that in addition to elected officials advocating, it helps to have a lot of citizens on board. How would they get in touch with you or know more about what they should do, who they should contact?
The best website would be www.hoanw.org, that stands for Heart of America Northwest.org. Hanford Watch of Oregon is the other one. If they would Google that, they could definitely get information. Part of the problem over the 21 years is they've sort of divided and conquered us. Mm-hmm. They have taken the waste and put fancy acronyms with it and divide it out. One testimony or one hearing is about one kind of waste, another hearing about another kind of waste, and all of a sudden we're told, this is it, this is the end, we're making a final decision. And it's been death by a thousand cuts over these 21 years.
So, thank you. I'll put a link on the front page of my
excellent.
Website.
Excellent. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can you please read the communications item number 420?
Request of Carol Ford to address council regarding feeding coyotes in the city.
Ms. Ford. Hi, welcome to the City Council.
I moved to Irvington last summer, and I lived, actually it's kind of ironic, I lived right by OHSU or, you know, Coyoteville. I didn't see one coyote last summer. And in November, I was on 33rd and Fremont, and I saw one looking like it was about ready to for the light to change. It was at 7:30 at night. You know, and since then, I am not exaggerating when I say I see one every day. I walk my Cocker Spaniel. I have to pick her up. It's getting to be out of hand. And I know some people, you all have probably read, people were feeding them in Irvington, and I know they have good intentions. But I really feel that an ordinance banning the feeding of coyotes would be a start to, you know, stop this ridiculous behavior. There's a state on 18th and Knott where I see them sunning in the backyard. It's like 16 city lots. They love it. I mean, they have a perfect environment, and people do not pay attention. They just let them walk by. And so On April 20th, I wrote an email. There are two people, Ashley DeLop in Denver, started a hazing program that has really worked. Coyotes are starting to be afraid of people because they're confronted by park people, by workers. You don't make them feel welcome. You know, they think that we're here to feed them. Anyway, Ashley DeLop answered me right away. She's had all kinds of national recognition for her work in Denver, and she said, "Hi, Carol. What state are you in? Many states have laws banning the feeding of coyotes, so that might be a place to start. Wild animals don't make friends with people feeding them. They view them as a source of food, life or death, and will become aggressive to get the food they need. In Colorado, almost every time a person has been bitten or scratched by a coyote, there has been human food involved or an off-leash pet that attracted the attention of a coyote." And I also know that on-leash pets have been killed. You know, it's even large Labradors have been attacked on leash. And this is important right now because right now is the pups are being born, April and May. And the pups are going to be, you know, enjoying their little estate on 18th and not, and then they're going to see how comfortable it is to live in Portland. And so people, first of all, have to stop feeding them, and then people have to start scaring them. And I was happy to meet with Barbara Brower from Portland State Coyote Project, and she and I are going to try to get the word out on the hazing techniques. And I've given you information about the hazing technique and how it worked in Denver. And anyway, she says, again, she said, "This is a critical time to get that message across, as pups will be out of their den in the next 2 months, and parents will either teach them to ignore or avoid people, depending on what we teach their parents." And they say a fed coyote is a dead coyote, because if you don't haze them and get them out of your neighborhood in a humane way, then they do end up having to be killed. And the populations increase after they're killed. You know, it's a scientific truth.
Ms. Ford, thank you for bringing this to our attention. I have your email address, and I'll ask my staff to forward your inquiry to Multnomah County Chair Jeff Kogan, who has Animal Services purview, and will facilitate a direct conversation with them regarding your ban request.
I appreciate that very much.
Yes,
thank you very much.
Thanks for your testimony. Can you please read the title to communications item 421?
Request of Barry Joe Stull to address council regarding who is Barry Joe Stully.
Good morning. Welcome back. Glad you're here.
Good morning, Barry Joe Stull. Yes, the question is, who is Barry Joe Stully? I was going to have my friends who are into that kind of ritual do a Mr. Stully's horoscope. I have his name here spelled B-A-R-R-Y space J-O-E space S-T-U-L-L-Y with the date of birth of August 13th, 1962. Well, Mr. Stully came into existence on December 18th, 2009. It was when a police officer put a Y on the end of my name. I don't know where they got the birth date, and this is kind of interesting for me. I applied for Social Security benefits, and they asked me if I ever used another name, and I said under the penalty of perjury, no. But here we are, Barry Joe Stull, a.k.a. Barry Joe Stully. So I Googled Mr. Stully the other day, and it came up, did you mean Barry Joe Stull, which I thought it might suggest. But no, it has an actual Barry Joe Stully, and apparently that's me under the absolutely made-up name. Now, if you're like I am a fan of some NPR programs, you may have heard the four-syllable word on Car Talk, bogus. This thing was a complete fabrication by these same folks I've been doing the dance with down here at the courthouse and across the street at the Justice Center. The Portland Police, Multnomah County District Attorney, the Multnomah County Circuit Court. It's epic. It's endless. They made it up. Put a Y at the end of my name. Now, I know that's fishy. Commissioner Fish, you wouldn't like that either. I'm glad to report that as of yesterday, a fellow out of joint said they were going to look into finding me some housing. That's part of that trickle-down theory. They had apparently enough money to get 20 people off the street, and they stretched it to 30, and I get to find out today if maybe there's no 31. But meanwhile, the coyotes have done a very successful job of eradicating the rats in my neighborhood where I'm camping. That's one of the things. I hope we don't go to the city like New York City, where you can tell whether they've eradicated the rats because there's more cockroaches. And I hope we don't end up with having different vectors for problems, making all of our decisions. One of our problems is, of course, this ongoing and unaccountable abuse of me by the hands of all our state employees. I think a conservative would say, they're not getting paid to do that. And a liberal would certainly say, there's certainly the government's role isn't to abuse social justice activists. So that's my 10 cents. See you next month.
All right, that gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We'll proceed with time certain, 10 a.m. time certain, emergency ordinance 423, and then we'll hear 422 after that. Please read 423.
Authorize acquisition of 146 acres of land in Southwest Portland to preserve as a natural area.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Sorry, Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. I'm very pleased to announce that the City of Portland, Metro, and the Trust for Public Land are working as partners to purchase 146 acres of undeveloped natural area from the Riverview Cemetery Association. This acquisition has been a high priority for the city because of its significance on several levels. It protects forest from development, enabling us to maintain the existing tree canopy and the streams. It provides salmon and wildlife habitat. The seven streams that run through this property provide much needed cold water for salmon and other aquatic species. This cold water also contributes to cooling the Willamette River, which it currently exceeds the state DEQ's water quality standard for temperature. It links the largest and only urban state park, Tryon Creek State Natural Area. Our first steps will be to remove and control the invasive species and restore native plants, protect the forest canopy and wildlife habitat. In the not too distant future, Portlanders will be able to enjoy a much-needed nature-based recreation near downtown and a dense population base in southwest Portland and in southeast Portland. City environmental education staff will work with local schools to use the property and its restoration activities as an outdoor classroom. This acquisition represents a lot of hard work across several agencies, so I want to recognize and thank all of our partners and staff who have worked long and hard to make today possible. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague Nick Fish, but I'll just state sort of the order of run here. We'll hear from Zeri Santner of the Bureau of Parks and Recreation, Dean Marriott, Bureau of Environmental Services, and Deborah Lev. We'll make a staff presentation. We have invited testimony from Jim Desmond of Metro, Don Goldberg for the Trust for Public Land, David Noble of the Riverview Cemetery Association, and then we have others who are signed up to testify. So my colleague, Commissioner Nick Fish.
Well, thank you, Dan, and thank you for your stalwart leadership on this issue. It was over 100 years ago that the Olmsted brothers had the foresight to propose to Portland that they focus on acquiring natural areas on the west side of the Willamette. A foresight that led to the assembling of a parcel we now call Forest Park and to a number of other properties which have had a profound impact on our city's health and future. Today, we have a chance to take another historic step forward, to add 147 acres of very sensitive land in an important area of our city to really a marvelous series of what I call pearls that run from Forest Park all the way to Tryon Creek. In the Parks 2020 plan, the specific issue of nature in the city is called out and identified as a core priority of Portland Parks and Recreation. But as Mike Houck and others here know, those were words on paper. To actually make progress in bringing nature into the city and progress on our whole strategy around the acquisition and maintenance of natural areas, we need a leader at Parks who made this a priority. And before I introduce Zeri, who has recently announced her retirement after 30 years of service to the Bureau and 8 years as the leader of the Bureau, I want to specifically call out her superb work. And this is not in any way to diminish Dean's role, but as Dean said the other day, it was this partnership between these two bureaus, the Bureau of Environmental Services and Parks and Recreation, with Metro and the Trust for Public Land that made this day possible. So, Mayor, could we break with protocol and simply acknowledge first Zeri Santner and her role in this day?
Congratulations. Thank you.
And so today, in closing, I just want to celebrate the good work that happens when different bureaus and leaders at the city work with our regional partners to get things done. And at a time when perhaps people are scratching their head and saying, can government get things done? And I'm not talking just about Portland. I'm talking about at every level of government. My experience in this council is that there's a high degree of cooperation and collegiality and collaboration. And today is yet another illustration of what good things happen when we work together. So I am proud to join with Dan in presenting this matter to council and to first recognize Zeri Santner.
Thank you very, very much, Commissioner and Mayor, members of the council. It's truly an honor for me to be here to ask for your approval of adding this significant piece of property to the portfolio of city nature in Portland Parks and Recreation. As Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Saltzman eloquently articulated, this is a very important link in creating a corridor of natural areas for wildlife, for ecology, fauna, flora, as well as for enjoyment of the public in this entire area of the Southwest. And it's a piece of property that was identified in our natural area acquisition plan that you approved a few years ago. So, and another significant aspect of this project, as Commissioner alluded to, is the partnership. Without that partnership, we could not saved a significant parcel of land, large, 146 acres. There aren't any other larger pieces of properties in the city that we could buy from one property owner. So that's very, very important. And obviously, we are extremely thrilled with the cooperation of the property owner in willing to talk to us and consider this. And this is a wonderful example of how we in the city, particularly Park Bureau, we have been leveraging our resources to accomplish the goals that have been identified in 2020 plan. And once the ownership of this transfers to us, once we conclude this transaction, we will begin the restoration projects. And we already have assembled partners in terms of funding for restoration, but we will ask the citizens who have been always great in volunteering and helping us for the stewardship of this piece of property. And finally, after restorations, we will conduct a site plan, a management plan, which we will engage the community so that we could appropriate public access to this site could be provided. And with that, I want to thank my partner here, Dean Marriott, who's been a stalwart in all of these cooperation, collaboration that we've had at least as part of my tenure. And as you have heard from us before, we have purchased a lot of properties on the east side, and we're making a lot of progress towards expanding the natural area of the east side. This was a unique opportunity that presented itself. And if we can thank anything, perhaps we can thank the economy for it because it became available so we could pursue that. With that, I want to introduce Dean Marriott.
Thank you, Zeri. Mayor Adams, members of the council, Dean Marriott, Environmental Services Director. I know we have a lot of speakers here today, so I'll be very brief. when the council adopted the city's watershed management plan in 2006, you really adopted a strategy for us to aggressively seek to protect the quality watersheds that we have left in the city. And there's probably no better example of that than these 146 acres that include, as Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, the seven cold water streams that feed directly into the Willamette. So that's why BES is participating. We fully support the efforts that have gone on here, the partnership, as Ari mentioned, with parks, with Trust for Public Lands, with the property owners. We look forward to working on the aggressive action that's going to be required for restoration of this site. When you get a chance to go out there and walk around, some of you may have seen it already, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And we look forward to engaging with the friends and neighbors in the area to get their assistance. Zary and I have already made contact with Lewis and Clark right next door. I know that they are interested in the long-term monitoring and study of the area using their students, so there's a great opportunity not only to use public school students, K through 12 students, but college students and graduate students too. So we look forward to that day coming. And now I'd like to introduce Deb Lev, who will make a brief presentation. Thank you.
Welcome, Deb.
Thank you. Deborah Lev, Portland Parks and Recreation. I want to just take a few moments to introduce you, council members, and anyone else watching to this property that we're very excited about. So the location of the property is south of the Selwood Bridge on the slopes above the Willamette on the west side. And this area here forms part of the spine that we call the West Side Wildlife Corridor. And this is, as Director Santner mentioned, one of the largest remaining undeveloped properties in the city. So this parcel provides a link in the protected corridor. We have a lot of natural area properties already protected, Washington Park, Markham, Marshall Park, Tryon Creek State Natural Area, Forest Park, of course, and this helps create that link and maintain the green backdrop when you're looking at the west side of the city. As was also mentioned, our acquisitions are guided by our natural area acquisition strategy that came to council in October of 2006. And this area was highlighted for a needed connection. So our new natural area park at 146 acres will be one of the largest natural area parks in the city. It will be about the same size as Oaks Bottom Natural Area and just slightly smaller than the nearby Markham Nature Park. The diversity of habitats on this very large site, as mentioned, there are seven streams that run through ravines on the property. The wetlands, this is forested wetlands, another special status habitat, and provides unique habitat features, particularly for amphibians and reptiles on the site. The site is predominantly covered by forest, both deciduous and evergreen forests. And it's large enough that it has some intact interior forest, which is critical for wildlife such as woodpeckers. And as was also mentioned, and you can see in this photo, some of the areas of the site are heavily infested with invasive species, but our restoration plan over the next 5 years will improve the health of the site, and our long-term management combined with the restoration will ensure the healthy forest into the future. So let's look again at those seven protected streams that reach the Willamette at Powers Marine Park, and that 5 degrees Celsius temperature difference in this case means a difference of 10 degrees if you're looking on the Fahrenheit scale from about 70 degrees in the main stem Willamette, and water coming out of these streams is about 60 degrees. From a fish's eye view, that's really important. The cool water is critical to their survival, and they use this shallow water off the shores of Powers Marine Park as a refuge. So coho and Chinook salmon and steelhead and coastal cutthroat trout have all been counted on samplings at this site at Powers Marine Park. Again, we want to mention our appreciation of our community partners, folks from the neighborhoods and the schools and organizations who work with us, both supporting our acquisition program and in particular supporting our ongoing maintenance and interest in restoration in our natural area properties. And we look forward to joining with the community in planning and long-term stewardship of this site. And once again, want to thank and acknowledge our primary partners on the site, Metro Trust for Public Lands, Environmental Services, joining with Portland Parks and Recreation. We think it's a great partnership and will be a great future park. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So our invited testimony is Jim Desmond of Metro. Metro is one of the partners in making this happen. Don Goldberg, Trust for Public Land, also key to making this happen. And then, of course, it wouldn't happen without a willing seller, and that's David Noble of the Riverview Cemetery Association. I'll start with you, Jim.
Mayor Adams, members of the City Council, Jim Desmond. I'm a director at Metro. It's my great pleasure to be here today to celebrate this and seek your approval of this 146-acre acquisition that Ms. Lev outlined. Just want to point out a couple of things here. You cannot overstate the importance of seven drainages into the Willamette River and being inside the city limits of Portland. This is just an extraordinary opportunity for wildlife habitat, water quality, and environmental education, as noted. And from a regional perspective, there are few urban sites that I'm aware of anywhere with this kind of potential. And this is something that Metro's had as a high priority since the passage of the first Open Spaces Natural Area Bond Measure 1995. So this represents a long-term vision. The second thing is I wanted to acknowledge the great work of Mr. Marriott and Ms. Zantner and their staffs and the Trust for Public Land who have done a terrific job putting this together. It's Metro's pleasure to financially participate in this, and on behalf of the Metro Council, they wanted me to extend their thank yous to you and your staffs for the great work here. The Metro funds come, of course, from the 2006 Natural Areas Bond Measure passed by the voters of this region, and this is another great example where voters take action that leads to direct investment. This property will not only preserve habitat, but will create the kind of Portland and the kind of community that makes us a better place for jobs, education, economic development, and the kind of community that we want to build. Lastly, this will probably be my last time in front of this body before Ms. Zantner's retirement, and I just at a personal level wanted to commend Zeri for her extraordinary 30-year career, her gifts as a landscape architect, project manager, and then eventually senior leader and then director of the agency of the Bureau will be. She's just had a tremendous legacy to this region and the city. And at a personal level, Zeri and I were named directors on back-to-back days. We were appointed directors of our respective parks department in back-to-back days in January 2003. And we spoke on the phone, I believe, the day I was appointed or maybe the day after. And we both pledged to each other to improve the cooperation and the relationships between our respective agencies, which were good then. But as with any relationship, there was room for improvement. And the two of us took that very seriously, and with Zeri's leadership, I feel that we're in a far better place as partners today than we were 8 years ago, and I will greatly miss Zeri, and I thank her for her service here, and this acquisition really caps a tremendous career. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Don?
Good morning, Mayor Adams, commissioners, and city staff. My name is Don Goldberg. I'm the primary project manager responsible for the Riverview Project for the Trust for Public Land. The mission of the Trust for Public Land is to conserve land for people to enjoy as parks, trails, and natural areas. I want to repeat that, to conserve land for people to enjoy as parks, trails, and natural areas. Riverview, the project that we're here and so proud to and happy to present to you today, embodies the best of what the Trust for Public Land does and why I choose to be employed by them. Almost 3 years ago, I met with the city staff to talk about potential assets that would be those dream projects to acquire, those elusive projects that we've all that have been unobtainable for so many years. Riverview Project was at the very top of that list. We had big dreams, but we had small expectations. But through hard work and great partnerships with the Bureau of Parks and Recreation, Bureau of Environmental Services, and their tremendous efforts by their staff, the Sellers Riverview Cemetery Association and their cooperation and desire to protect this property, Metro government and its staff, the public, Senator Devlin and Representative Garrett, and of course the support of Directors Zeri Santner, Dean Marriott, and Commissioners Fish and Saltzman, I stand before you with a truly once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to protect and restore the largest contiguous forested privately held property in the city of Portland. So today, together, government, the private sector, nonprofits, and the public, we once again prove that large dreams for the benefit of the public are obtainable, and I strongly support the acquisition of the Riverview property, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you, Don.
Sure.
David Noble, Riverview Cemetery.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. My name is David Noble. I'm the Executive Director at Riverview Cemetery. Riverview is pleased to have partnered with Trust for Public Lands, who in turn have worked with the city and Metro to enable our excess land to be preserved as a natural state for the current and future generations. We're excited about that. The decision by our board to enter into this agreement is consistent with a long history of partnering with government for the good of this community. For those of you who don't know, Riverview was actually founded by Portland's founders. In 1879, Portland Mayor William Ladd, he wasn't the mayor at that time, but he was a former mayor, along with U.S. Senator Henry Corbett and leading Portland merchant Henry Failing, all names you may have heard of, or at least driven on their streets, they purchased 350 acres of land to create a cemetery for the growing community of Portland. And you might find it interesting that one of the reasons they did this was that they felt that Lone Fir Cemetery was just too far out of town. Well, in the ensuing 130 years, Riverview has cared for this community's dead, but it has also, as I just mentioned, partnered with government to serve the living. I'd just like to share a couple examples of that. You know, in the early 1900s, when Highway 43 needed to be widened, Riverview donated the land for that. And you'll like this. In 1925, Riverview donated the land for the West End intersection of the then new Selwood Bridge. And
it's been sliding to the river.
And it's been sliding to the river ever since. And we're right now in the process of transitioning additional land for the new Selwood Bridge. And 100 years from now, probably, if people are still driving cars, we'll probably give some more land for the third new Selwood Bridge, or maybe not. In 1926, Riverview donated 13.6 acres for the creation of Powers Marine Park. It was named after Ira Powers, who himself was involved with donating land for the extension of Terwilliger Boulevard from Lewis and Clark down to Lake Oswego. As most of you know, recently we've partnered with the City of Portland to create a bicycle trail through our private property to help connect Southeast and Southwest Portland. So Riverview is excited in this instance, again, to partner with government to make something good happen for the community. Now, some people have asked us why we have been willing to actually sell the land for less than its appraised value. But I think it's consistent with this history that I've just shared with you about the things Riverview has done in the community. So it's our hope that these 146 acres will remain the forested reserve that you're intending to establish it as, that it will create a system of parks and trails for the community for all time. And just like Powers Marine Park, many generations will benefit from this. So, again, it's our pleasure to be involved with this and to partner with you on this important project.
Mr. Noble, if I could just observe that we had some inquiries about whether anyone is actually buried in this 146 acres.
Not to our knowledge.
And we did. Commissioner Leonard was particularly concerned that some of his colonial forebears might have been buried in this land. And we've confirmed that there are no, in fact.
Well, one of the important aspects of cemetery management is actually keeping track of where people are buried. but again, not to our knowledge. There is a lot of invasive species, not only the English ivy and the garlic mustard and blackberry and others, but a few abandoned vehicles and homeless and a few other invasive species that have to be taken care of, I guess.
So, Mr. Noble, along the lines of Commissioner Fish's questions, a number of years ago in the early 80s, I was curious where David Campbell, who was the fire chief for which the David Campbell Memorial is named on 17th and Johnson, we're currently talking about moving. We hold an annual ceremony there every June 26th to commemorate not just his death, but the 36 Portland firefighters who died in the line of duty. So I commenced trying to find where he was buried, and nobody knew. And so I went back to it was in the early 80s, so there was no internet. So I went to the Portland State Archives and started reading the old newspapers and discovered he was buried at Riverview. And went to the front office and saw and met a very Vincent Price-esque man who was a tall, older gentleman. You probably remember who he was. And I said, "Do you keep a record of where people are buried?" And he said that he did. And I said, "David Campbell." And he looked at me and said, "Oh, the fireman." And I said, "Well, yes." And he said, "Well, my dad actually worked here as well. And as a child, I remember the firefighters coming up here with a caisson every summer and going to his grave. I can take you right to where he was buried." So it was, I had an opportunity then to look around and appreciate all the historic names are there. But I did want to ask you one question that I'd heard might be true, that one of Wyatt Earp's brothers are buried there.
Oh, yes, Virgil Earp is one of our more famous residents.
Yeah. it is indeed a very historic place that one can spend an afternoon wandering and recognizing many historic names.
Well, that's correct. And if you visit our website, we have a historical line where you can click on different years and see various people who were community leaders and read the history about them. The cemetery is rich with history.
Great. Thank you.
Can we get free plots?
We can work something out, maybe. I've heard that there's people that would like to bury you, but
you have no idea. I'm sure people would take up a collection.
Well, thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don, Jim, and David, for your key roles in all this. That completes the invited testimony.
Thank you all.
That was a good reply.
Carla, how many people do we have?
About 10.
All right, so we'll do this about 2 minutes, right?
Yeah, let's try to keep it as short as you can. We all, unless there's somebody here opposing this, we all think it's a great idea. Please begin.
The first three, please come on up, are Dixie and Dave Johnson and Mike Houck.
Welcome back. Ms. Johnston, would you like to begin?
I'm going to let Dave go first, if that's okay.
Mr. Johnston, would you like to begin?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And we, of course, are just thrilled that the city and Metro and others have gotten together to purchase this land and preserve it as an open area. Now, as you all know, Dixie and I are active in the Neighborhood Association as the Land Use Committee. However, since the association hasn't met and the board hasn't had a chance to vote as to a position on this, we're speaking in our own behalf rather than as representatives of the Neighborhood Association. Through the years, we've been familiar with this land through many proposals on it, some that have risen to the level of land use actions, others that have never gotten that far. And we've become familiar with the land and its limitations. Development would be terribly difficult on it. The street grid isn't sufficient to really support much activity on it. And we could go on. So